Right. Okay, so my title is on the equivalence between Euclidean and Inian formalisms. This is QFT. And this work was done with Don Morrow, who appeared, it seems, and Ian Morrison. Okay, so what I'll tell you about is how we show the equivalence between Euclidean and Inian formalism in the system. In Poincaré paths, so I'm repeating myself too many times, but let me write that. So what we show is that if you compute a Euclidean correlator on a d-dimensional sphere and suitably analytically continue that to the Zeta space, then we show that that's really equivalent to the correlator calculated in the Inian formalism in the cosmological patch. Or very often called Poincaré patch. In Bunch-Davis vacuum. So that's what we'll do. And also I have to say some conditions, and I'm too short to catch the blackboard, so I have to use this one. Very difficult, isn't it? Oh, I can't do it. That's all right. Okay, I'll continue here. Right, so for I'll do this for scalar field theory. With non-derivative interaction. And also we use Pauli-Vidar regularization method, so that we are not just saying that it's infinite on the one side, it's infinite on the other side, therefore they are equal. It's not as simple as that. So you are using Pauli-Vidar regularization. Okay, before I go into discussion, the argument or used in the proof, I want to tell you that we did some examples. So there are some there's some evidence for it. So we have shown equality in some example of conformally coupled massless scalar field. And actually, I think this is useful now. Very good. Also, in fact, Ian Morrison has recently come up with a very nice argument to show the equivalence for an arbitrary mass case. So therefore, we have some evidence for arbitrary mass. In any dimensions, no, massive, sorry, yeah. Ah, I should have said so. Massive. Right. For arbitrary mass and dimensions for this diagram, so the evidence is quite good. All right, so next let me outline the argument we use for proving this. All right, this one moves. For the moment, Zushita. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's some generalization which you can do, provided some conditions are satisfied. Let me say just for clarity that we are talking about Zushita. So I will describe the proof of equivalence in three steps. The first thing which you can prove is that this equivalence between the Euclidean correlators and Inian correlators can be established in static path. So equivalence in static path can be established. And then we notice that, in fact, the Inian approach in the Poincaré patch when all points are inside a static patch is the same thing as calculating the correlator in the static patch from the beginning. So in static patch. And the third thing we show is that this in correlators in the Poincaré patch is analytic. In coordinates of points, So obviously analytic in complexified Poincaré patch. So the logic goes as follows. So we show equivalence of the Inian formalism in the Euclidean approach in static patch, and then actually Inian formalism in the Poincaré patch agrees with the Inian formalism in the static patch, which we show here agrees with the Euclidean approach. Then, when all points are inside solid path, they disagree with that. And then we show that Inian Poincaré informalism is analytic. So that means that once Inian formalism in Poincaré patch agrees with this special case with the Euclidean approach, then it must agree
with the Euclidean approach everywhere.
So that's the argument.
Analytic in, so for example, in such as when all points of space are separated.
Yeah. And for time-like separated case, you have to take a limit where from the complex plane.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And I want to leave this there, so I have to. I have to. Could you put this down for me?
Okay.
And actually, if I have time, I'll discuss some implication of our work for IR issues in the system. Now,
Well, I mean, these amplitudes in bulk rate fashion and the Minkowski formulas have imaginary parts, right?
Yes.
And the Euclidean ones don't.
It does. Real. Yeah. Yeah, I talk about that, I think, in the implication section.
Something kind of funny, right?
You have to have some interpretation of that. Yeah.
Euclidean correlative FK analytic continuation are not real in the light cones.
Yeah.
So the statement about being equivalent is not that the Euclidean field theory is equivalent to the Fokker impatience, that if you take the Euclidean result and do something to it, you get
you certainly have to continue the correlators to time like separation.
Yeah. Okay. I'd like to start with the second point. So in Poincaré formalism in formalism and the Poincaré part is actually the in formalism in the static part if all points are in the static part. So to show that I have to use some properties of the in perturbation theory. So when we calculate, say, endpoint correlator in the in formalism, and say you want to look at a particular Feynman diagram with internal vertices, say Y1 and so on. And in general, you have, of course, an integral over these internal vertices, dy1, dym, and you got a bunch of propagators here, or just schematically. So this is not coincidence limit, this is just y something else. So you are integrating over the space-time of a point, which are the internal vertices. But in the informalism, you only have to integrate over the causal path of these points x1, x2, and so on. So S is, in fact, equal to the causal path of around these points. And this has some implication in the digital space. So this will lead to the second statement, but to understand that, I have to draw this Carter-Penrose diagram. The Carter-Penrose diagram of the space looks like this. So say you are at this point, which I call I equals 0, and then so this is the other point
this is the outside of the sphere. And the in the part of Penrose diagram, you draw these diagonal lines. And the static part is in here. So this is the static part in the part of Penrose diagram. And the Poincaré part is this plus that. So this is the Poincaré part. Right. So therefore, if all points are in the static part, say this is x1, x2, x3, and so on, causal path inside this Poincaré path is obviously inside the static path. So this is the causal path of the point. So by picture, you see that if you restrict the informalism in the Poincaré path to the point, to the case where all points are inside the static path, you just get the informalism in the static part. So now let me go on to three. And I have to say that we spent a lot of time trying to prove this, and we did it, but I think for most physicists it's obvious, probably. It's certainly natural. Anything like this, which is nice, is always analytic. So for the purpose of this talk, I prove this by common sense. Is this a while, I think? Right, so that's hopefully there's no objection to that. So I concentrate on the first part, equivalence of the informalism and the Euclidean formalism in the static part. And this also, I think, has been raised by several people. And by now, you may think that it's obvious as well. But there are some subtle points. So in order to get to that, let me discuss how this equivalence comes about. So the first point. And in the first talk of this conference, Emil Mutula wrote down the metric of the static part, which is the following. Plus over one r squared plus r squared. So we are here in d dimensions rather than 4 dimensions. And we are taking the Hubble constant to 1. And to make contact with the sphere, it's very useful to say that actually r is sine theta going from 0 to pi by 2. And then you, of course, get minus cos squared dt squared plus d theta squared plus sine squared omega minus 2 squared. And this is almost a sphere, in fact, if you change the sign here. So we do that. And we change the sign here. So we say t is imaginary. And so you change the sign here and identify t, tau, with tau plus 2 pi. Then this is the metric of the sphere. So when you make the time imaginary and make it make the time periodic, you know that it's a thermal field theory. So we get the thermal field theory with the temperature 1/2 pi. So what we are noticing here is that if you do quantum field theory on the d-dimensional sphere, then actually you are doing thermal field theory in the static part of the system space time with temperature 1/2 pi. And this is nothing but the QFT on the sphere. And this was pointed out a long time ago by Gibbons and Perry, among other things. So let me just write their name. 1977. Now, so Euclidean field theory is a more familiar form of thermal field theory, but there is another approach, which is the informalism, exactly. So let me just say that alternative approach is informalism. Or Schrödinger-Kelvis formalism. And you can, to see how these are related, a good reference we looked at is Landsman and Van Esch, 1957. So this is a thermal equilibrium.
Minkowski doesn't coincide with direct in calculation in Minkowski.
Okay, yes, so here I'm talking about equilibrium theory, because Euclidean quantum field theory on the d-dimensional sphere is equilibrium thermal field theory with this temperature. Yeah. No, it is true.
Yeah. You mean that on the sphere he has this?
Yeah, defining it that way. Yes.
Okay. So on the sphere he has. Okay.
So yeah, you can make analytic. Well.
No, I understood. On the sphere you have this.
Yeah. For other states it won't be true.
Yeah.
Yeah, so by following this argument, it's equivalent to the motivation theory.
I'm not getting lost. What are you doing with time? So if you had an interaction cortex, how could you integrate it over?
Yeah, so we are. Yeah, so let me write down the measure for integration.
Well, could you just show us a special example like lambda theta the third? If you could show me what the propagator, or even lambda theta the fourth, or something like that.
So, I mean, this is just the analytic continuation between static patch coordinates and the sphere. So,
you could write down what looks like
the familiar. See, I really don't see it at that point, but time there goes back to minus infinity, right? And that analytic continuation is making time be periodic. I'm not saying you're wrong, I'm losing it.
So we are dealing with a thermal field theory now, basically. So time is really imaginary and periodic.
Actually, another point which I wanted to stress, it very frequently happens, and especially the sitter is an example. If you take a state which is normalizable in Euclidean signature, once you analytically continue, it just disappears from the spectrum.
Yeah.
So with the free theory, we know that this state exists. It's the von Schadens vacuum.
Yeah. So in the free theory, it doesn't depend whether you deal with a free or interacting theory, but it frequently happens that after analytical continuation, states are disappear, or another one is brought into the spectrum. It's just because we go from finite volume to infinite volume.
Yeah, okay. Okay, it's not just a comment.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's T, right?
That's T is integrated. Right. So T is integrated from 0 to minus 2 pi.
Is that supposed to be the ending?
Euclidean.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'll tell you that this is in as well. But I'll tell you that.
And then you have another piece.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Yeah. And so in the Euclidean quantum field theory, what you do here is write the internal vertex coordinates as time and space, and you integrate along this contour over T. So integration of T is actually along this contour. So that's what people tell us. Now, how do we know actually that this is actually equivalent to any motivation? And that's also what the people tell us. One important point, perhaps, is that in doing this perturbation theory in Euclidean theory, the external time, the points, sorry, the time for the external points are also on this contour. So, and
things be back as far as I want to.
Yeah, so please wait. I'll tell you. I'll try to explain.
Okay. Slowly. Okay.
Yeah. So in the Euclidean formalism, the times for the external points are only imaginary time as well. And in the usual Euclidean approach, you just do the calculation on the D sphere and look at the result and find out what's the correct analytic continuation to the physical values of, say, separation, point separation. And that's what Ian and Don have done. But there's a way to do analytic continuation without explicitly calculating the integral, just by deforming the contour. And that's what Langmann and Pandya tell us. So the rule is the following. So you can deform this contour in whatever way you want, in like this. And the rules are the following. So first of all, you have to carry these external times along the contour. So you can't leave this alone and just change the contour, or the other way around, actually. To make this real, you can't just pull this out and put it on the real line. That's wrong.
and you have to carry these points along the contour, and also you have to start from some real number down to that real number minus 2 pi I. And also the third rule is that the contour, the imaginary part, must increase along the contour. So that's all you have to do. And the clever thing, some people, well, maybe Schwinger and Kellwisch, have come up with is the following. So you just go to the extreme and use this contour. So you start from T0, go there, and come back, and do that. And here, we imagine that the imaginary part is decreasing along this line infinitesimally, and decreasing this line infinitesimally, and suddenly comes back, comes down to this T0 minus 2 pi I. And if you put the external point along, say, the upper horizontal line, the infinitesimal tilt of this contour takes care of which epsilon prescription you have to use. And in this case, you get time ordered for later in thermal equilibrium. Now, this is still not what we call the informalism. First of all, you have to take the limit where T0 tends to minus infinity. And then what you have to show is that if you call this this bit control C and section C and this bit section A, you have to show that section A can be neglected as you move this point T0 to minus infinity, and you get the usual in informalism, and you establish so if you can neglect A, then you establish that the Euclidean formalism is actually equivalent to the informalism.
Why would you neglect the that defines the initial temperature.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're not removing
that. You can remove that because physically what's happening will be that initial thermalization, so
using the state to thermalize anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Thanks for answering to your own question.
Yeah, so exactly that mathematically, section A can be neglected because basically that the propagator tends to zero as the distance between two points tends to infinity. In the kind of theories we are talking about, massive scalar field theory. But in any case, this happens in the theory we are talking about. So this establishes.
How do you know? I can't give a constant. Constants are completely analytic. Right?
Huh?
How do you know the normalization is right?
What is right?
So how do you know the normalization is right? How do you know it can't give a constant?
Normalization of.
So you're saying the integral over A can just be neglected, right? How do you know it doesn't give a constant?
I'm not saying that integral over A is zero or anything.
Do you mean something like if you look at correlators between points on the real part of the contour and the imaginary part, those go to zero.
Right, yeah.
That's T0.
So the contour connects.
Yeah, so
if you propagate the propagator connects this to. then that contribution goes away. This is called factorization.
Right, so how do you know that that integral doesn't give a constant?
It can, it does.
It's not 1.
Yeah, well, this integral.
No, that integral.
Yeah, that's all right. So in the language of term of field theory, this actually means that the whole partition function factorizes into the partition function on C and partition function on A. And as long as you calculate the correlator for external points on contour C, this is irrelevant. Yeah.
So the statement is true that they're equivalent up to an overall normalization constant?
No, you usually divide the... Yeah, they're the cancellation, actually.
Even if you send the D0 to minus infinity, if you increase R accordingly, and so suppose that you're approaching to D0 to minus infinity along the right cone, then this distance does not go to infinity.
Yeah, that's a good point. But what we show is that that contribution is suppressed by the measure of the integral. But maybe we can discuss that.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Right. So suppose I suppose that some people got convinced and some people are skeptical, but let me discuss the implication of this result. How much time do you have?
Canvas clock we're using.
We'll say eight moments. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. So I think the next bit is more controversial than this one, probably.
Yeah, so I want to discuss some implications of this result to the IR issues.
Excuse me, one more thing. So by doing what you do there, are you really erasing all information about formality?
Instead of
the Hawking temperature, the fact that there was a Hawking temperature, the 2 pi r is showing up, right?
Yeah, so the not neglecting A means using a grand canonical ensemble with the free Hamiltonian. But including A corresponds to summarizing the theory of the true Hamiltonian. So that's the difference. Yeah. So there's some sort of summary.
No, there are two things there I think you have to be clear.
Okay.
When you write the path integral representation of that, the boundary conditions on the fields know precisely about the density matrix that you have there. There is where your thermal condition comes and where the propagators will know about the thermal conditions. If you do perturbation theory, you're going to be doing perturbation theory in the thermal density matrix.
Yeah.
So in either case, whichever way you want to slice, your correlation functions would know about that.
Yeah.
And the in informalism has nothing to do with thermal field theory. In fact, if you want to avoid any arbitrary density matrix in time, that's what you do. Regardless of whether the density matrix is thermal or non thermal, a pure state, a mixed state, whatever you do, the in is simply the fact that the density matrix evolves in time with a U magnitude. That's all.
If you do that in this way, you automatically give you this automatically gives you the thermalized initial state in the Hamiltonian.
Yeah, but you can study things that are way
up
the thermal.
Do that, yeah.
I mean, this is your initial state, the thermal density matrix, but you can move away from.
You can move away. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That's beauty of it.
Okay.
If you want to calculate thermal correlation functions, you just do the Matsubara and be done with it.
Okay.
So I abbreviate my title of this section. Right, so I noticed that the fact that the propagator tends to zero as the distance becomes infinite was crucial. And we know an example, of course, in which that doesn't happen. That's linearized gravity. So this correlator diverges in linearized gravity. So this indicates that in linearized gravity, this factorization doesn't happen. No factorization, or no neglecting of section A. So what should we make of that? And let me just take the point of view, which lots of people will disagree with, that the Euclidean gravity, at least perturbatively, gives you some nice gauge invariant result. So if that's the case, then the in-in perturbation theory will disagree with the Euclidean calculation. Well, unless some miracle happens. And possibly also it will be gauge dependent. So there will probably be gauge dependent divergence in the in-in calculation in the Poincaré patch. So that is one conclusion you can draw if you believe in the Euclidean side of the story. So that's one thing I wanted to. Yeah. I probably people will disagree on this point, but I don't expect that. Well, I'm assuming that the Euclidean approach gives you the gauge independent result.
But I just saw the paper this year where actually basically they showed it doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah. Read my paper, please.
Oh, I'll read the paper. So that's interesting.
And how they coincide, I didn't quite understand.
Sorry?
How do they coincide then?
I don't know.
You'd be saying that for gravity, for linearized gravity, you think that they do not. Sorry.
The condition fails.
Sorry.
Yeah. So, I see. So I started writing something, but maybe I should skip that. So in that case, some miracle would happen, or Euclidean theory is rubbish, or whatever. Yeah. But I don't know. Okay. And another point I wanted to make was this conflict between the De Sitter invariance and the so-called particle creation, which Sasha Polyakov was talking about and which we hear more about. So the point is that if the in formalism in the Poincaré patch is the same as the Euclidean approach, then we all know that if you do Euclidean perturbation theory, you get the Sitter invariance. On the other hand, in the Poincaré patch, you see particle creation. My guess is the following. So I studied so-called pi squared interaction, which can be solved exactly with Jensen Lee, my student. And here, there, what happened is that the following. So particle creation happens in this model as well. But if you plot the particle density, against the physical momentum, the graph looks like this. So the particle density you see in the visitor space is diverging as you decrease the physical momentum. But this stays time independent, or the theta invariant. But now, if you do particle creation calculation in the usual way, what you do is follow each mode. So what happens to each mode, each momentum mode, is the following. So this, each mode keeps getting redshifted. To get redshifted therefore by following this curve, if you look at each mode, the particle density seems to be increasing. So for each mode, so in a way, each mode sees particle density increasing, and that's what we see at least in this model. So my conjecture is that in the more properly interacting theories, like pi to the fourth theory, something similar is probably happening. You have the same invariant situation, but you see particle creation because each mode is constantly redshifted. That's there I want to stop. Thank you very much.
So is there any subtlety in the weak rotation when you are doing with the I epsilon term in the propagators?
Yeah, so this one takes care of this. This line is tilted infinitesimally.
Yeah.
And what happens is that, for example, if the contour is infinitesimally tilted like this, so then the light cone singularity caused by this point, for example, are here and here. So this tells you in which way this should be avoided.
Okay.
Yeah.
One more. Okay, if nothing, no one has questions, then let's thank it.
So
it's
time, I guess.